Hey, everybody. Joe here from the Lines Led by Donkeys podcast, but I guess you probably already knew that. If you like what we do here on the show, consider supporting us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/linesledbydonkeys. Just $5 per month gets you every regular episode early, access to our community Discord, a digital copy of my book, The Hooligans of Kandahar, as well as its audiobook read by me, and over 5 years of bonus content. By supporting the show, you support us and allow us to keep our show, as it has always been, ad-free. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Lions Led by Donkeys podcast. I'm Joe, and with me in the velveteen content cave of the Trash Future Studios is Tom. What's up, buddy?
I'm in the deep fried and battered content cave.
Yeah, it's the purple curtains are still my favorite part, and nobody will be able to enjoy those other than me because I'm looking at you through a camera. But you should just know that he is wrapped in a velour fucking mic hole. I don't know.
You know, for someone who writes for a living,
recent sales numbers will prove that I am correct.
I'm good, Joe. I'm heading home tomorrow for a little bit. It's my birthday soon as well. I'm gonna spend my birthday surrounded by other bald middle-aged men and sharks. So I'm looking forward to that.
The great sharks meetup.
Literally, Shocks is going to be in London. We're going to see Cockspire together. And I was explaining to someone, it's going to be a room full of about 2,000 middle-aged to mid-50s and older bald men in, like, way too tight jeans and Doc Martens. So,
got to paint them jeans on. Yeah, so you're going to go cocksparring in a room full of men in tight pants.
Yes, exactly.
Oh yeah,
it's like men who, and it's great because I love like a lot of skinhead stuff, and thank God a lot of these guys bought nice clothes in the 80s and kept them really well, and then unfortunately got too fat to wear them anymore, so they sell them on Vinted, and I buy, you know, vintage, really good quality Fred Perry stuff for like £2 each.
There's a store near me that sells Fred Perry, which I don't own any. It's not really my thing. But it's just called the British Clothing Store.
I remember passing that shop when I was in Den Haag, and I like took a picture of it. It's like somehow every country has weebs for other countries, and the Netherlands has British weebs.
They also have there's also an American clothing store, which I assume is just all of the other clothing stores smashed into one.
No, it's just like t-shirts with John Cena on it from like the early 2000s.
Fuck yeah. I mean, that's where I do all my shopping.
It's like Affliction t-shirts, you know, Rockstar Energy branded clothing.
Monster. That was the big one. I remember when Monster apparel was huge in like the mid-2000s, 2010s. And people would have the stickers on their fucking cars too. Like, imagine if you had like a tricked out, jacked pickup truck, because that's what these stickers always appeared on. Either that or sports cars that people couldn't afford, not nice ones, like a Nissan 300 or something. And there's just like a Coca-Cola sticker on the back. Like, is that cool to you? You're doing that with Monster Energy, man. Like, oh dude, check out my sick Honda Skyline with this Pepsi bumper decal. Like, I'm the fucking coolest.
Like, world's greatest rebrand that like Monster rebranded as the drink of choice for dudes who steal catalytic converters or work in GameStop to like people who like go to the gym and are going to have a heart attack by like 35.
Well, I got a few more months left in me before my heart attack's coming. Speaking of GameStop, one of my first jobs ever was actually a GameStop, and it was my first, it was the first time in my life I was ever the victim of an armed robbery. For people,
sorry, we're not blasting past. You used to work at GameStop.
I worked there for precisely 2 months and I was fired.
what era were we talking?
Oh, I would have been 16. So this is 2005.
So this is like peak Halo 2 years.
Yeah, probably something like that. I don't have many memories of that GameStop other than my manager smoked the worst swag weed ever in the alley out back and kept giving it to me, which was weird because he was in his 40s and I was, you know, 15, 16. I was the victim of my first ever, I was the victim of an armed robbery while I was there. And it was the dumbest armed robbery that I've ever been a part of, for sure. I've been a part of many, just the one. But I was in the back room because, you know, when you trade in games, they get put into different like sleeves. Like they don't get put in the cases. That part is important. All the plastic cases you see on a GameStop. Well, I don't know how many people still shop at GameStop, to be completely honest. I haven't bought a physical video game in fucking years.
I mean, to be fair, GameStop mainly now sell like My Hero Academia merch or like Funko Pops.
So it's Hot Topic.
Yeah, it's like...
It's Hot Topic without the Nightmare Before Christmas shit year round.
Yeah, it's Hot Topic for people with Discord Nitro.
Fuck, that's me.
Also, Hot Topic is also just Hot Topic for you as well.
Not anymore. I was recently in the United States again, and I went to a Hot Topic for old time's sake, and I felt uncomfortable. that's called being 35. But a guy came in, like I was saying, there's no games in the cases on the walls at a GameStop. Yeah. Anybody who's been to a GameStop knows this fact, because you go and pick up a case, you bring it to the front counter, and then we have to go get the game and put it inside. It is specifically so you can't shoplift or just take things off the wall, right? And this guy comes in, has like a revolver, and he sticks it directly in my coworker's face. And I just hear screaming coming from the front, because I'm in the back doing the shitty sleeves thing, because they didn't trust me in the money counter, because I was because I couldn't. Like, I'm a fucking dumbass, man. I can't do math. So you don't want me handling your change. Hence why, yeah, I majored in history and not fucking science. But I hear screaming and I open the door. And this dude is obviously tweaked out of his mind because he's very jumpy. He's obviously never robbed anybody before. He'd be better at it. And he's just like gesticulating wildly with this gun in his hand. And he produces like a pillowcase and he just starts shoving the cases from the wall into it. Like he's stealing, because each one of those games is, you know, $60.
Yeah.
And you could sell them online and get a few bucks here and there. But he's just stealing empty plastic cases. And then he just runs the fuck out. He doesn't even rob the till.
He just has a long coat with 60 copies of Grand Theft Auto San Andreas on the inside.
But just the empty cases. and then the cops come and, you know, my manager, who's out in the alleyway smoking swag weed, comes in high out of his mind because he's had to smoke like a QP of this stuff just to get a buzz. And like, so what was the value of what was stolen? He's like, 75 cents, give or take.
So my question, did the manager A, have a shitty goatee, B, a shitty ponytail, or C, both?
Shitty ponytail, chin strap, beard.
Oh god,
he looked kind of like the comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Actually, Joe, you'll find there's no games in the cases.
Worst robbery ever. Now, Tom.
That is
the first time I've ever had a gun shoved in my face. I hope he's doing well. He probably isn't.
The robber or the manager?
Oh, the robber. That guy obviously needed drug money pretty badly.
Yeah.
he needed drug money way more than I needed those empty plastic cases.
He could have just went around the back and like robbed the manager.
He could have just robbed the till. There are several. I mean, this is the early 2000s. We're still doing a lot of transactions in cash.
Yeah. And that's the lightest robbery that happened in that GameStop that day.
Yeah, he didn't plan that one out very well, I will say. Like we're going to talk about in this podcast, planning is important.
Yeah. I mean, like, if I was that guy, what I would do is I would wait outside the GameStop and watch people going in and wait for the person who obviously has a bag full of games they're going to trade in and then steal their 15 quid from them when they come back out.
I will say, of all the places in the United States that you could rob, a place that you could be almost guaranteed that nobody inside is going to have a gun is a GameStop.
We need to arm GameStop.
At least back then, it was all teenagers, and then the manager, who almost certainly had some kind of felony charge on his record that precluded him from firearms ownership.
Yeah. I'm just going to say it. People who work in GameStop, braver than the troops.
I don't know. It's not a hard job, man.
Both equally, you know, ripped to the gills on caffeinated energy drinks.
And doing way too much weed in the back alley, yeah.
Both taking a shitty job while they're still a teenager.
I mean, the next job I did get was joining the army. It's a
there
gateway drug.
Go.
Yeah. I did get fired. I guess I have to explain why I got fired now, because that's kind of it's kind of a cliffhanger. I got caught with weed at work because I bought weed from the manager. And then I, of course, being the fine subcontracting citizen that I am, attempted to then sell it to another employee who reported me to said manager. And then he fired me.
But like, this is, you know, you are embodying GameStop's whole business model.
Hey man, can I get some weed? The best I could give you is in-store credit.
You're like, he's like, I ain't got any weed. I got a lot of copies of Halo 2, though.
You want some Funko Pops?
Trading in your Funko Pop collection at GameStop for an ounce of weed.
When I worked there, it was so long ago, you could still buy a physical PC game disc there.
Yeah, Jesus, that would have been around the time when, like, the physical release of World of Warcraft happened as well.
I did not work there when that happened. I missed out on that. Thank God. Now, not connected to anything we're talking about at all. I tried really hard at the preparedness thing, but it really doesn't work. Tom, somehow we've gone this far in the podcast without really ever talking about Scottish history.
Yeah.
I don't know how. I actually work for, I know, what's a group of people that hate the Scots? Other than the British, it's low-hanging fruit.
The Welsh, maybe?
Okay, like, I work for Big Wales, and they told me to never report on Scottish history. And also, coincidentally, Welsh history, because I can't pronounce fucking anything in that corner of the UK.
Hence why my pleas for us to cover William Wallace have been ignored thus far.
Yeah, it's because I work for, what was his name? Rob? King Rob?
King Robert? I don't fucking know.
Fuck, I don't know. Haggis McSwords guy.
My knowledge of British history is limited so much because I refuse to learn any of it.
Robert the Bruce, that was his name.
There you go.
I got there eventually. Alright. So prime your best, most offensive Scottish accents. Crack a can of Bucky, because we're about to talk about the Battle
Buckfast
of
Flodden. Buckfast doesn't come in cans.
Why not? It feels like it should come in cans.
It's made by monks.
That's the weirdest thing I'm going to learn about today.
Wait, you didn't know Buckfast was made by in a monastery?
No, I thought Buckfast is the Scottish equivalent of Four Loko.
It kind of is, but yeah, Buckfast tonic wine is made by...
Wait, it's called a tonic wine?
Yeah. It's like made by a load of monks in a fucking in Buckfast Abbey.
Those monks wear Monster energy drink apparel.
Just wearing your tonsure that's branded with Monster.
Unleash the beast. Singing in canter.
Yeah, Buckfast tonic wine is made by monks.
You know more about Scottish history than I do. Take it from here.
I've drank a lot of Buckfast.
I haven't yet, and if we ever for some reason end up in Scotland, because from my understanding that's the only place that it's sold, I will try some.
If we ever do a live episode for Lions Led by Robots, I will make you drink Buckfast on stage.
I feel like that's going to be illegal from wherever we do the show, because it won't be in Scotland.
Technically, there is a legal thing about Buckfast, because like there's two different types of Buckfast. There's the one in the brown bottle and the one in the green bottle, and one of them has less caffeine content in it.
One has more Shrek than the other.
Ah, donkey! It's got layers! But yeah, like, some countries can't sell the high-caffeinated Buckfast because it's like, one, it can give you a heart attack, and two,
well,
it's like...
That's the one that I want.
I can't remember, like, there's a certain amount of percentage of, like, violent crimes that happened in Scotland that are attributed to consumption of Buckfast.
I mean, they did like, the same thing with Four Loko, to be like, people were doing crazy ass shit, like, we've never mixed fucking caffeine and alcohol together before.
Yeah, but like Four Loko isn't like a nationally loved treasure in the US the same
strongly
way Buckfast is.
Strongly disagree.
Okay, okay. Scots and Americans sound off in the comments. This is like epic rap battles of history.
Except everybody's just slurring their words and pissing themselves.
I drink so much Buckfast I start rapping like MF Doom.
Now, we're going to be talking about the Battle of Flodden, otherwise known as the Battle of Flodden Fields, or that time that the King of Scotland virtually nuked his own kingdom trying to tell the Brits to fuck off. The history of the Battle of Flodden is rooted in Scotland's attempts to become an independent kingdom like that of its neighbors in England and France. Previous to the 11th century, Scotland was mostly a group of minor kingdoms ruled by their own kings, all trying really hard to stab one another. Though by the early medieval period, and especially after the rule of King David I, Scotland was truly a unified, functioning, individual kingdom. Of course, the English looked at this and saw it as a threat because they had seen Scotland as rightfully there since pretty much forever, thankfully something that is no longer the case. This led to constant problems between the two of them. For example, in 1290, the Scottish queen died, leading to a group of Scottish nobles begin bicker with one another over who would take over, and that left things wide open for the English to swoop in and put their own usurper on the throne. Scotland, trying to resist the English, looked towards the one kingdom that they knew would be on their side whenever anything went sideways with the English.
I'm going to guess, I was about to say, is like, who hates the English more than the Scots?
The English.
who hates England more than the Scots? The Irish, the Welsh, Germany to some extent, but Germany didn't exist at this stage. It's the French. And the Spaniards as well. The Spaniards hate the English and have for hundreds of years.
You know, and they still kind of currently do. But for different reasons, mostly real estate.
the Fifth Crusade existing in Benidorm.
The next crusade is just going to be over like the British dudes who voted for Brexit despite living in Spain and owned houses in Majorca.
No, they're going to increase like the price of a pint by like 2 cents on those like beachside pubs in Benidorm, and then we're going to get the next crusade. But like instead of wearing like the tunic with the George's cross on it, it's just going to be the world's most sunburned fat dudes. They're going to like apply like sun cream on their body so they have the George's cross burned onto their body.
Now, France and Scotland came together and signed what would become known as the Auld Alliance. Of course, France is not doing this as a favor. The Auld Alliance was their baby, and they would use it to influence Scotland to be a thorn in the side of the English. You might recognize this as they become a French proxy.
Something that never happened again.
Nope, never. And this is exactly what they did. Though having France as an ally did little to stop the warfare between the Scots and the English. Border raids, naval raids, full-scale war, all of these were commonplace. And by the 1500s, it had been going on and off for about 200 years. Now, the idea with this alliance with France is like, if it truly kicked off between us just stabbing one another over some like border villages, France would have to get involved. And that had kind of worked. It had stopped things from escalating to being like truly threatening. So the English and the Scots signed the Treaty of Perpetual Peace in 1502, a treaty that might have the most bullshit name in the history of treaties.
Yeah, it's really bold calling it that. This is like the opposite of nominative determinism.
It lasted like 20 minutes.
The ink wasn't even dry.
It did seem for about 5 minutes that the two sides were really going to stick by this thing because certain tenets in the treaty made it so it really did seem like it was going to work. For example, the King of England, Henry VII, gifted his daughter Mary to the Scottish King, James IV, for marriage. You know, that's a good way to bring the two sides together. The treaty also swore that the kings nor their heirs would ever be able to make war on one another. And to further reinforce this treaty, whoever broke it, whatever side broke that treaty, the Pope would then excommunicate the offending side.
The Pope is like the referee. He's like, you know, Bruce Boffer.
Somehow this still didn't work. Even the power of the Pope in the 1500s was not enough to keep the Scots and the English away from one another, which kind of surprised the Pope, to be completely honest.
Yeah, and also, you know, at this stage, the Pope still had power over the two of them because Protestantism wasn't really a thing yet.
Yeah, he's got a few more good years left in him. The same kind of constant irregular harassment war continued. Border conflicts, raids, things like that. But nothing real. Nothing that was truly threatening, again. And nothing that anybody was going to trigger the excommunication clause over. And this was just considered par for the course and mostly acceptable by the two sides. Borders weren't changing hands, large-scale wars, and the mustering of armies that came with those, which caused a lot of fucking money, which would in turn implode treasuries, you know, none of those things were happening. So it's considered, you know what, this is fine. We're not having to spend all of our, you know, savings account on scraping together some farm kids to go kill one another. Then Scotland's alliance with France popped back up into the picture. The Italian wars had been burning through Europe, and they involved both England and France. With England, pro-Pope, France, anti-Pope, but not that kind of anti-Pope, just against the Pope.
Not the fun anti-Pope.
No, not like the guy who calls himself the Pope and lives in like Nebraska or whatever. Which, yeah. That guy does exist. I think he died recently, actually.
Wait,
whatever.
What?
Yeah. There was an American anti-Pope. He had like his family as congregants and that was it. He had a whole website and everything. It was wild. And the website looked like it was made on Angel Fire like 30 years ago.
I mean, like, look, America really is the land of people declaring themselves with titles. So like, yep, go off, king.
I mean, my personal favorite is the homeless guy in San Francisco that declared himself emperor. That guy ruled.
Maybe we should listen to him.
Oh, this is like Civil War era.
Maybe he's like the Highlander. He just exists.
Wait, are you saying that the immortal god emperor from Warhammer 40K is real, but he only exists as a homeless American guy in the Bay Area?
I mean, like, that's very fitting for our current, you know, reality.
In 1511, the English were recruited to join the Holy League by Pope Julius II in order to become an active participant in the War of the League of Cambrai. The French got pissed and activated the Old Alliance, demanding that the Scots go to war against the English as a distraction in order to pull men and material away from their war efforts on the mainland. The Scottish King James was hesitant. You know, getting dragged into a continental war against the papacy looked like a bad deal for him all around. You know, getting excommunicated is bad for business. James had done a lot of footwork to get closer to the Pope over the years, namely talking about wanting to launch a solely Scottish crusade against the Ottomans, and had been named a protector and defender of the Christian faith by the Pope only a couple years before. He was getting in that quality poping time, you know?
I mean, like, listen, we're still experiencing that crusade with Scottish guys going to Turkey to get hair plugs and their teeth done. That's the real crusade that lives on today, is everyone's flying on Turkish hairlines, they're flying back with their little donut on their head.
Or that might just be, that is a true Ottoman soft power victory.
Yeah. The Ottomans, like, they effectively won history because now the entirety of Western Europe is dependent on them for getting, like, teeth that look like Wrigley's chewing gum.
Yeah, those look bad. Veneers look terrible.
And like most people get them and they're like too big for their mouth, so they can't like fully close their lips and it looked really funny.
It looks like their father was like a donkey or something.
This is white people's reaction to, you know, us not being able to culturally appropriate anything anymore. It's like, we're not allowed to dress like Paul Wall and have grills, so instead we're going to Turkey and we're getting fake teeth to show how wealthy we are. Instead, we should go back to letting white people have grills as a kind of sinecure or...
This is how we apply true sanctions to the Turkish economy.
We need to get rid of the veneers and let white people wear grills again, because one, it makes everyone look swagged out, and two, it hurts the Turkish economy.
I support veneers, but only because you never know when you're going to be caught in a situation where you have to chew through a brick wall.
No, but this is the thing, is like the veneers are actually like, they're meant to be like not that durable.
What's the point?
I don't know. I don't fucking know.
I don't get it.
Wear grills. Just everyone needs to get grills instead.
That reminds me, there was a grill place right outside of Fort Hood, which is, I believe, now called Fort Cavazos, but it was my last duty station, and it was called like the 21st Street Grillist, and it shared a storefront with Boost Mobile, which is the perfect 1-2 punch.
Incredible. Everybody needs to look like Paul Wall.
The French managed to smooth over this, you know, whole I don't want to get involved in this war lest the Catholic Church turn against me, by offering him soldiers to help out, as well as a massive amount of money. Now, this money wasn't to, like, the Scottish treasury. It was a personal bribe to the Scottish king, and it was massive. And it also included, you know, we're going to give you all of this gold, and we'll also buy you a navy.
And you can use the navy to transport the gold to melt down to make grills.
We're finding the foundation. So what we all know as the Scottish monopoly on grill making.
Yeah,
Shrek had the best grill.
Shrek iced out. Anytime you look at him, you got froze.
Iced out Shrek.
Iced out Shrek. He's doing like the Thuganomics cover pose. He's the third member of UGK with Shrek.
This is the dumbest shit on earth.
Aye, donkey, don't look at my teeth. You might get froze. God. It's not a fucking onion on my wrist. It's a fucking iced out rolly.
I think we're just explaining how Shrek got divorced.
Divorce Shrek. Fiona's gone to Turkey. She's getting hair plugs as well. Everyone's getting hair plugs.
Yeah, and all of these bribes, you know, grill-based, navy-based, whichever, they worked really, really well. And meanwhile, the English King Henry was insistent that he lead the invasion of France himself and left the Earl of Surrey back in London to defend the realm, but mostly to lead the defense of the English north should the Scots, you know, get a little bit feisty.
Descend, if you will.
The Scots are descending.
I like a side note, a funny thing about like Scottish warrior history is a lot of the precursor to like modern Scotland was the Pictish people. It was like very far north Scotland, and like Julius Caesar encountered them and like wrote about how they had like tattooed bodies and all this sort of stuff. It's like, yeah, no, that wasn't true. Like, and people still believe this to this day.
I mean, I would like to believe that the Pictish and early Scottish people were just covered head to toe in monster energy drink tattoos, but it's hardly the first time that like an outsider went to the shores of another country and had to blow up, church up their writing to make what he was seeing look as, you know, quote unquote, barbarous as possible. Because, you know, look how enlightened we are. Everyone outside of our realm must be, you know, barely people.
Yeah,
and then they tattoo their skin, they fuck in the open, and they barely wear clothes, whichever it may be. And like, I don't know why Romans ever complained about any of those things. They did that most of the time too.
Yeah, William Wallace really wasn't wearing like a kilt and a sparring chain. He was actually wearing...
He wasn't wearing a kilt. Kilts weren't invented yet.
He was wearing like a Paul Wall style long line tee, a Monster Energy fitted snapback, and grills. I gotta keep bringing this back.
The basketball shorts that are so long, they end just above the shoes.
Yeah.
He couldn't afford Forces, but he had fine Pumas.
He was wearing those D3 Osiris's.
William Wallace, the monster drinking sneakerhead.
You should have seen his section on Girl Tape 2.
I fucking hate you.
Directed by, like, I don't know, fucking Lance Bangs.
Wait, like Lance Bangs, the Jackass guy?
Yeah, he did loads of skate videos as well. Yeah, same with Spike
that's
Jones.
Right, he did. I just assume he vomited in the background of all those two.
No, I think you're thinking of Lester Bangs. He died at 32.
No, Lance Bangs. He's still alive.
Yeah. He does like Arcade Fire videos and stuff now. I don't know.
God, what a strange career arc.
I'm William Wallace, and welcome to Scotland!
William Wallace crawls into a shopping cart and then his friend just slams him into a curb.
Hi, I'm Steve-O and welcome to Scotland. We're turning Wee Man into haggis.
And then we're going to eat him alive.
R.I.P. Ryan Dunman.
Oh, yeah, it sucks. Now, the French were pissed about this entire thing. They thought their alliance with the Scots would mean that the English wouldn't bother them for fear of a Scottish invasion. And it turned out that the French had miscalculated. As the English, and King Henry specifically, weren't really worried about the Scots at all. And to underline this point, when the French sent a messenger to the king's invasion force telling them, you should turn around or the Scots are going to invade you from the north, he literally just ignored them. Now, he didn't believe that the Scots wouldn't do it or couldn't do it. He simply thought, the Earl of Surrey could probably handle them. It'll be fine. Meanwhile, the Scots were already mobilizing their forces and they were going all out. King James ordered all men between the ages of 16 and 60 to report for duty within 20 days. He also previously established a crown-owned armory, which could churn out plate armor for his infantry in preparation for having to deal with the dreaded English longbow, something that anybody who fought the British at this point had experience with.
Yeah, see, if instead if they'd invested in inventing tactical grills, they could have caught the arrows with their teeth.
Exactly. A longbow arrow is just flying towards you and just ricochets directly off your face.
Yeah, you just smile at it.
Now, despite having this government-owned armor factory, as much as one would exist in the 1500s, he still couldn't pump out enough for his whole army, so it was relegated just for the people in the first ranks. So, like, when the longbow arrows start raining down on them, the vanguard of every infantry force would be somewhat protected, and I assume everyone behind them just has to get really small and hide behind his friend, you know? On top of that, the Scots, with French help, had also standardized the weapons their soldiers would carry, settling on massive pikes measuring 5 yards, or 18 feet, depending on which source you use. These fuckers were long.
How the fuck does one person use that?
I mean, they're not super heavy. I mean, they're just a stabbing tool. It's
still 18 feet long.
It's not the most wieldy weapon on Earth. And we'll come back to this. The Scots also include an artillery section of 29 different guns, ranging from siege cannons to much smaller ones called culverins, which would range from kind of like a two-man musket to something a little bit larger. But the Scots did not have a lot of history or skill using gunpowder weapons, so they had a French advisory team teach them how. This is normally where I point out that the Scots were mustering teenagers to old men and everybody in between, that nobody knew what the fuck they were doing. But you'd be wrong. Instead, King James thought ahead, and the French sent 40 pike warfare experts ahead of time to begin training not only the conscripts, but also the Scottish commanders who would be leading them.
These guys famously would later feature as experts on Deadliest Warrior. Oh, you see, the pike, it is a very long weapon, but it is very effective because your enemy has to get within 18 feet to stab you. If you just go poke, poke, the enemy is dead.
It is a very long weapon and also very sensual.
It is using the pike is like caressing a beautiful woman.
With a massive cock.
It is a beautiful woman who is shaped like an 18-foot-long pole.
Ah, yes. Those kind.
That later on, that woman will go on to be called Brigitte Bardot.
I should call her. Now, you're probably thinking, wow, all this good planning doesn't sound like something we would normally talk about. Well, hold that thought. Now, for people who don't know, a pike is a weapon of movement, not a weapon of static fighting. For a formation of pikemen to be effective, the army must be charging or facing down a charge. This is not like you don't get trapped in a slugging death match armed with an 18-foot-long pike. And I know, this is old news for all those pike heads out there, but, you know, just saying, for all of us plebs.
Sorry to all the pike heads out there. It's very hard to swing an 18-foot pole.
Yeah, people are probably thinking that this looks more like a phalanx-style combat where two sides are slamming into another and stabbing with each other and with spears and whatnot, but that's not what they were trying to do because they're not carrying shields. Their whole goal is to charge at the enemy formation, drive them from the field, or force the enemy to charge them into a wall of pikes.
Yeah,
there's no middle ground with pikes.
Yeah, the English soldier is like doing, you know, in Dark Souls, where the enemy has like a really well telegraphed slow attack and is just doing a perfect parry.
they trained heavily on that, I'm sure.
They got really good at hitting R2.
Now, there were elements of the Scottish army that wouldn't be armed with pikes, namely the Highlandmen. The king just let them do and be armed with whatever the fuck they wanted. Huge claymores, battle axes, bows, whatever. Their battle plan just was go nuts, guys.
Yeah, then they had to face down Grilliam Wallace.
Grilliam Wallace is another merch design that we could create that if you wore it in public, you either run into a listener of the show and they immediately know what that is, or everyone just thinks you're the dumbest fucking person on earth.
I feel like Grilliam Wallace could be up there with the gangsta SpongeBob or the gangsta Bugs Bunny and says, Lord, forgive me, I'm about to go back to the old me.
I'm all aboard with Grilliam Wallace.
Stay north because my mouth stay froze.
Fuck off. Now, most importantly, the French trainers stress the point. Point, get it? Because we're talking about pikes.
Yeah.
I get shitty puns too, asshole. Anyway, they warn the Scots, do not get bogged down. You need to charge or face down a charge or do not commit to battle.
Mm-hmm.
If you did, you would lose.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing is a literary device. I'm not going to say the thing. I'm not saying it. By August, King James had assembled the largest, most well-trained and well-equipped army that the Scots would ever deploy, period. And specifically against the English. 42,000 well-trained, well-armored, well-armed, and well-supported men. However, there were glaring flaws in James' army. For example, none of his men were paid even a cent. And then there was their feudal obligation to their king, their conscription decree. It was good for 40 days.
Oh, I feel like this is going to last a little bit longer than 40 days.
Well, if you don't see any of this as being a problem, then congratulations, either did King James, who is absolutely full of himself. And he was already kind of well known for being an arrogant dickhead, even in the best of times. And now with this massive army at his back, it only made the situation worse. He didn't take suggestions well, and instead he insisted he knew best when it came to everything. He even ignored his own French advisors who were supposed to be there to make sure he didn't trip over his own dick onto a pile of pikes. And when he ordered his army across the northern English border to begin the raiding, you could immediately see this begin to pop up. At first, things went well, as the English would need more time to gather their men and their strength. But with each success the Scots achieved, King James grew more and more full of himself. This is when, like, French advisors were like, okay, we need to start planning for an actual battle, because, like, we're using a very specific weapon. You need to get them trapped in a way where our weapons work for us. He was like, nah, fuck you guys. I know what I'm doing. He didn't even start sending scouts ahead anymore. And this led to a situation where 500 of his men walked into an ambush of English longbowmen and were killed.
They didn't have the grills in. If they had the grills in, they wouldn't have died.
Yeah, this wouldn't happen if they would listen to Grilliam Wallace.
Yeah, listen to Grilliam Wallace. Literally, you are smiling in the face of death. That is the merch design. Grilliam Wallace on the back, I smile in the face of death.
Despite this, James kept his army in the north of England because his goal was to draw the English forces as far away from London as possible so he could destroy them in the field and then leave the road wide open for further advances in the future, he assumed heavily supported by the French. And he marched down the eastern Till River and began to sack and loot towns and castles that he found along the way. However, James ran into his first real problem when, fat with sick English loot sacks, I assume with like pound signs on them or whatever, about half of the Highlandmen simply fucked off and went home. They're like, nah, I got my fucking mortgage right here, dog. I'm going home. Me and my grills, we're going home.
Yeah, fucking dead right.
They got their money for grills. They had to go back to Scotland to get the grills.
No, I would have thought they were given the grills as like military issue.
Remember, they ran out of supply. So only the first rank of people get the tactical grills.
Only the officers got grills.
Yeah, exactly. These salt of the earth enlisted linemen, they had to go save up. They had to steal from multiple English villages just to save up for one grill.
Yeah, they're getting it tooth by tooth.
For only 5 cents a day, you can make this Scottish Highlandman's dream come true and supply his family with a grill.
And then there's just like definitely some guy that I'd run into in a pub who's like, yeah, these grills have been in my family for like 700 years.
this is my family tartan. He just smiles and shows his teeth.
And it's just like red, green diamonds.
So when these guys all left, that meant he lost a full one third of his army. Then it began to rain. Now, rain is never good when you're in the field, when you're campaigning. And it's even worse when, you know, roads are hardly a thing and you're on, at best, on horseback. You know, men, tens of thousands of men all working down the same shitty dirt track road rapidly destroys the road. It turns it into nothing but horse shit and mud. And this forces James to pull his army up around a hill called Flodden Edge to wait for the rain to lift. Meanwhile, Surrey was just figuring out England had been invaded. He made for Durham, and he collected what was known as the Banner of St. Cuthbert. Now, this was a banner the English saw as a holy relic that had been carried into battle against the Scots forever. And I guess it was only carried into battle against the Scots because its magical banner powers didn't work against anybody else. Like, no, this is specifically anti-Scottish magic.
You know what? Fucking, I wish Saladin had crossed Europe and gotten to England. Jesus Christ, I hate this country so much.
Someone go get our anti-Scottish wizard. No, it doesn't work on anybody else.
The fucking anti-Scottish wizard trying to manifest into his fucking orb, God's sake.
All like he concentrates, he sends up the English version of the spirit bomb, and simultaneously every bottle of Bucky in Scotland explodes. That's all he can do? He's been training his whole life for this moment.
There is actually a typo in the spell book, and it was like, oh, that was the Bucky exploding spell. Sorry.
What other ones do you have? I think I can make it rain.
If you bring me loads of myrrh, I can make grills.
I can make rent go up in Edinburgh. Oh no, he's a magical landlord. Kill him!
Oh God, magician land. Like, having a landlord is bad enough. Imagine like your landlord was like some Z-list Penn and Teller.
Oh, he just like, what's this behind your ear? And he pulls out an eviction notice. It's like, oh, fuck.
Magical Greg evicting you. And poof, all your belongings are on the street.
I don't know what it is about a magician named Greg that I find so funny. It's the least magical name in the world. This is like, you know, I went to magical community college. My professor's name was Wizard Frank. It's like, Frank? That's the wizard I have to be afraid of? Like, careful. He majored in anti-Scottish magic.
Going, like, to a really shit version of Academy Gaulier, instead of becoming a clown, you just become a really bad magician.
Hey, at least I can respect clowns, even if I don't want to be near them.
Yeah.
With the invasion of England going on for 10 days now, Surrey finally made it to his army in Newcastle on August 30th, 1513. He commanded
about... What are you up to? You are not looking fucking lush-like. What are you doing in Newcastle?
The only thing I know about Newcastle is the beer. That's all I got.
That Nuki Brown's nice.
You also guys call it Nuki Brown. That's adorable.
Yeah. Also Geordie Shore. It's like Jersey Shore, but set in Newcastle.
I can't tell if that's more or less depressing. Or is it a wash? Is it just they cancel each other
it's
out?
It's kind of a wash.
Mm. I'm okay with that. At least Jersey Shore ended like decades ago. Is that shit still going on?
No. Jersey Shore only around for 5 seasons. When is Pauly D going to show up to this battle?
I assume when he gets parole.
No, Pauly D never went to prison.
Really? Honestly, that's surprising. I just assumed. I'm sorry. I assumed every member of that cast was bound for a jail cell at some point.
The anti-Scottish wizard once again fucking up a spell, and instead of like summoning a fireball, he just summons Snooki and JWoww.
Look, I believe in strict arms control, but only arms control in that a wizard named Greg can't summon the situation into Scotland.
Yeah. So they summon Mike the situation. Oh.
Surrey commanded about half of the number of men that James did, only around 22,000. His men were split between regular infantrymen, longbowmen, and a small number of cavalry. His infantry were armed much differently than the Scots. The weapon they would be carrying was the bill, or the bill hook. The bill was effectively a traditional spearhead with a curved blade underneath. It looked like a farm tool, and it was one. effectively.
It's used for like turning soil.
Yes.
And stuff.
And it meant a soldier carrying it could stab like a spearman, slash like a swordsman, and also use the hook to snag enemy weapons or even people by their armor and drag them down to the ground to be finished off. It was a super versatile quality weapon. And since it was a military version of an agricultural tool, most people were already at least familiar with it. And it was much easier to use. Unlike a pike, it didn't require tight-fitting, drilled, and unified formations. Like the famous longbowmen, the infamous longbowmen, who trained their whole lives to use it. Effectively, by the time a man was stuffed into an army holding a billhook, he was pretty goddamn familiar with that weapon.
The longbowmen just showing up with one massive arm like Glenn Quagmire in that one episode of Family Guy.
I would fucking hate to be an English longbowman, if only because, like, when they dug up their skeletons, like one of their forearms is just completely torched from using it. It was like covered in micro fractures and whatever. It's like, look, just give me a billhook and send me to die. It's fine.
Yeah, it's like that meme about Shadow the Hedgehog.
Sorry, what?
You don't know the meme about Shadow the Hedgehog where he like breaks his bones every second and becomes like immortal?
No. No, I don't.
Do you want me to read it out to you?
No! The English also had fewer guns than the Scots, only about 22 of various different sizes, though all of them were smaller than the ones that the Scots had. Now, they were all under the command of a guy named Sir Nicholas Appleyard. However, the small guns had one major advantage. They were easier to be moved around the battlefield, and their gun crews were much better trained. Both things will become very important in a little bit. I don't mean to make Surrey sound like he was some god king of preparedness or whatever, or that England had concrete plans in place for when Scotland invaded. They absolutely did not. For starters, all of England's best troops were away with the king, planning for the invasion of France. Surrey got people not good enough for that venture, or raw conscripts with zero experience. Furthermore, he had no supplies. I don't mean his supply lines were stretched thin or whatever. He literally didn't have one. He had no supplies.
Okay, what the fuck?
So when you showed up for service in Surrey's army, right, you get conscripted. You get a rusty billhook and nothing else. There's no armor to spare, no time to make any, no time to stockpile food, nothing. They didn't even have fucking blankets. Which is bad because it's August and the cold season, cold and rainy season specifically, this is England we're talking about, Northern England, is rapidly approaching. So Surrey's plan, if they didn't immediately win a victory, was just like, fuck them conscripts, I don't know.
Oh, for God's sake. But anyway, about Shadow the Hedgehog.
Fuck off! Are you still talking about Shadow the Hedgehog?
I've spent the past like 5 minutes trying to find this. So after 50 years, I started to feel like I was losing my sanity, so I started to break my fingers. And I would just break my fingers and set them again. I started breaking all my bones. I broke every bone in my hands. I broke both my arms separately. Then I started to break my own ribs. I broke my femurs. It took a while, and then I healed them and broke them again. After 5,000 years, my bones were all scar tissue. They'd all grown so solidly back together that I was unable to move. And after another 5,000 years of furious infinitesimal movement, I built up enough muscle mass to spontaneously break any bone in my body. Then I could move again. My body had done so much healing that I almost healed instantly. This is all I do now. Every time I move, my body, my bones shatter and heal back into my neck shape. If I take a single step, every bone in my leg splinters and then reforms. I don't know what pain is because I have been alive for 10 million years.
Yeah, Marilyn Manson did the same thing so he could suck his own dick. Then came the bad news. Surrey got word of the Scots' location. It was on the high ground, which is very easily defended. And since his force was much smaller, there was absolutely zero way he was going to advance up that hill and fight the Scots. He would have to lure them away in order to meet them in the field before his men began to run low on whatever the fuck it was that they were foraging from nearby fields. The finest grasses in the meadow, I assume, just all the conscripts milling about the fields like cows chewing on the cud, you know?
Conscripts have four stomachs.
They have to send out like sheepdogs to gather up the conscripts out of the fields.
I mean, isn't that just NCOs?
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's NCOs.
So on September 7th, Surrey ordered his men to march in what looked like a large flanking maneuver, crossing the Till River and hiding his forces behind a hill called the Watchlaw. This would not only block the Scots' view of his forces so he could continue to move them back across the river, and right smack dab in the middle of James' line of communication back to Scotland, and he was already in place before the Scottish scouts noticed that he was there. Then the English army formed itself up for battle near the village of Branxton. French advisors and his own Scottish lords warned King James that following them out to battle would be exactly what the English wanted him to do, and they're very clearly baiting him by cutting off the route back home, because the advisors also point out, like, we are secure on this hill. We have tons of supplies. They can simply wait the English out. Like, there's no reason to go charging out into open battle, which would only benefit the English, than to stay here in a defensive position that they cannot attack. Like, time is on our side. James promptly looked them in the eye, told them to go fuck himself, and then ordered his forces to break camp at Flodden's Edge and make for Branxton to fight the British.
Yeah, he was just like, why would I listen to pussy-ass bitch when I'm my neck on froze like this?
I wouldn't listen to these French advisors. Not a single one of you has a grill. Not a single one.
I will only listen to my advisor, Lord Gucci Mane.
He advises me, he's handing me a letter, I should get an ice cream cone tattooed on my face.
He tells me that this incredible beverage he calls Scissorp is incredible for my tactical mind, except my heart feels quite slow, and I have gotten a great stomach.
Our tactical supplies of lean are running low.
I would actually love the idea of giving, like, a 15th century king lean. I mean, they were doing shit that's probably equally as bad as lean anyway, but it's,
I mean,
they're
drinking, like, cut wine like it was water, because water would kill them.
I mean, like, all the popes in the, like, fucking 19th and 20th century were, like, drinking cocaine wine.
Fuck yeah. I would like to go back in time, meet Alexander the Great, and gift him a jug of lean.
No, give Alexander the Great a cup of lean, a, like, fresh mint vape, and, like, I don't know, a porn mag from 2004.
Like, that would absolutely blow his mind. He's like, wait, you have pictures of this? I don't have to carve this on walls anymore? This rules.
We don't have flavors like this in Macedonia.
Our only flavor is potato.
Does this vape come in potato flavor?
We only have savory vapes where I'm from. Now, the king ordered the remaining Highlanders to take up the left flank, soldiers under the command of three different nobles to take up the center, and the king himself would take the right flank. Both sides then did the exact same thing, deployed their artillery to the front line in front of their soldiers to begin shooting at one another. The lighter English guns were able to get into position much faster and began hitting the Scottish guns before they were even set up. It also helped that the crews were well-trained enough to actually hit them, while the Scots began to fire and missed virtually everything, sending cannonballs harmlessly into the dirt in front of the English lines. Then a cannonball smashed directly into the face of the Scottish artillery commander, sending him to the great haggis in the sky. The Scottish guns were blown to pieces, and then the Scot gunners realized that they were absolutely doomed if they stayed around their cannons and hauled ass, leaving the English gunners to then turn their cannons on the front rank of the Scottish pikemen. The English were comfortable just sitting back and lobbing cannonballs at the Scottish, and the pikemen were forced to stand there and take it, getting crushed under the weight of a bombardment.
Stop hitting yourself. Stop hitting yourself.
This has to suck even worse, because these cannonballs aren't exploding or anything. You're just getting, like, absolutely ethered, getting hit center mass with a cannonball to the chest, tearing through you, or bounces across the ground and rips your fucking leg off.
And the only thing they'll ever find in a couple of hundred years is your grill.
I mean, I feel like this is, like, they had to invent the cannons. The English had to deploy the cannons because it's the only thing powerful enough. If it hits the grill, it'll just take their head clean off their fucking shoulders.
The grill still in perfect
immaculate condition. The grill is immaculate.
Everything else turned to mulch.
King James wanted the English to attack him, but now it was pretty clear that they would not. They didn't need to,
And now the pikemen were wavering, getting like absolutely pulverized by cannonballs, and they're demoralized and pissed off. They're forced to sit there through this entire thing. And King James is starting to wonder that his men were going to desert and run away rather than wait for their turn to get turned to mulch by a cannonball. It was clear to James that he would have to take out the English guns first, so he ordered his left flank to advance. And this is as effective and successful as the Scottish are going to be for this entire battle. The Scottish Highlanders smash through the English conscripts like they are hardly even there, hacking and slashing at the English flank with their claymores and battle axes, all while screaming bloody fucking murder. Even the sight of them terrified the English, who were forced to stab and slash at them with their billhooks multiple times just to bring down a single man.
Yeah, they're all yacked off that lean.
the Scottish lean-powered berserker gang.
And all you hear is just like booming out of a speaker in the sky as Lil Ugly Mane's No Slack in My Mac. Meanwhile, the English soldiers are like, bitch, I'm morose and lugubrious.
The English soldiers are so fucking scared that I feel like that it there's no music anymore. It's just the shrieks of terrified dying conscripts.
You are about to be killed by weaponized Buckfast.
This side of the English line was held by Surrey's youngest son, so he quickly ordered in his reserves to stabilize the line and save his son's life before he was split in half by a Scottish buster sword. But the Scottish attack continued, its center advanced, pikes outward, and this is where things immediately go wrong. Mm-hmm. Remember how I talked about how movement was important for the use of pikes?
Yeah.
Well, foreshadowing is not doing it.
Okay.
Well, King James didn't notice before deploying his men, you know, on account of not scouting ahead still, but directly in front of him was a marsh.
Ah, this is going to go very well.
So his men were now bumbling through it, getting stuck in the mud. The ranks broke down as they struggled, and then the English center began to rain longbow arrows down onto them. Once across the marsh, the Scottish center had to advance up a hill called Pipe's Hill. They did so under a hail of arrows, but their pike formation had completely and totally broken down along the way as they were forced to drag themselves through the mud. Soon, the Scots are throwing away their pikes and drawing out their backup swords. This leads to another problem. What are their enemies armed with? Billhooks. They have a length advantage on you if you're holding a sword, and the only advantage you had was the length of your pikes. But now you're advancing up a hill armed with a sword, and now the English have billhooks and they're fighting downhill towards you. Everything has gone wrong immediately.
Yeah, you're losing the game of mine is bigger than yours.
All three of the Scottish nobles in the command of the center fell under a hail of arrows and a face full of billhooks. Watching his center vanish, King James sat there and had a choice. Withdraw and save what was left of his army, or send everyone else in, including himself, into the swirling mass of the Death Marsh. Of course, he ordered his men in, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about this.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
He ordered the rest of his men right through the same goddamn swamp he ordered the first wave in, seemingly having learned nothing. And remember, he's close enough where he can see everything going wrong on the hill. So, these pikes don't seem to be working. What could fix this problem? More pikes.
You know, I think James would have benefited a little bit by spending some time playing some, you know, tabletop RPGs, maybe some Hearts of Iron 4.
Nobody ever benefits from playing Hearts of Iron 4.
Yeah, no, it just turns you into a Nazi. yeah, like, you know, if I was in his shoes and I just sent a large group of men to their death because of where I sent them, I would not be overly eager to go there again.
At least myself. Like, yeah. Look, I've played a lot of Total War games. I've hemorrhaged many, many armies and very stupid and badly planned out ideas, right? But never once am I in them, right? I don't even put my king, who's not a real person, in there because, like, they're worth something.
Mm. James, you should be playing, like, you know, a cracked version of, like, Age of Empires 2 on a Gateway PC in like 1999, you would have learned so much more, and you could have won this battle.
There's like five different ways he could have won this battle. First of all, by not fighting it and being smarter. But, you know,
trying to go for a diplomacy victory.
He should have gone for a cultural victory and built the world's biggest Buckfast bottle jutting out of London like the pyramids.
Replace the shard in London with a giant Buckfast bottle.
Like, there's one thing is sending wave after wave of people you don't care about into a lost cause. And then there's something else that comes to sending yourself in. It's a level of disconnection and hubris that is just wild to me.
Yeah, it's like really cutting your nose off to spite your face, except your face is your life and your nose is an Englishman stabbing you in the heart.
Catching a billhook directly to the brainstem.
Yeah.
The same thing happened with this next wave. Storming into the mud, slowing down, formations breaking apart, all forward momentum of the pikemen being lost, all while being turned into pincushion by longbows and their faces being torn off of farm tools.
And you know what? A couple of hundred years later, people would just call that a tough mutter.
That's true. I'm going to do the Flodden Hill tough mutter, where me and like five friends are just going to rain arrows down on you. Now, obviously, they'll be blunted. Otherwise, we go to prison. But the billhooks will be real. And then, for the low, low price of 500 euro per ticket, you can prove that you're a man. Or you could go to therapy. It's up to you. We know which one you're going to pick. Sign up today. As King James and his men struggled up the hill towards the bows, the English infantry pulled back, giving the bowmen more time to get those reps in. You know, volume is important. James must have been thinking, now is when my reserves will come in behind me and sweep the field. But they never did. The reserves, led by the Earls of Lennox and Argyll, simply never showed up. And an interesting note of history, to this day, nobody's entirely sure why. It could have been something very simple, like King James never actually giving them orders to come in or when they should come in, just assuming they'll pick the right time. That's the most likely reason. Or another reason, which is also pretty likely, in my opinion. From where they were sitting, they saw the battle was lost, and committing their men would just add to the chaos and also would kill them personally. So they fucking stayed back. King James saw that, my reserves aren't showing up. I might be fucked here. So he sent orders to his other lords, Lords Home and Huntly, to immediately rally their soldiers and send them to his aid. Home took one look at the situation that the king had gotten himself into and said, "Fuck no, I'm not going in there." Lord Huntly then began to scream at him and, according to several sources, threatened to kill him should he continue to refuse the king's orders. But he was like, "Nah, man, I ain't going. You can go if you want." However, Lord Huntly knew, if I go in there without him, I'm fucked too. So he also stayed back. One lord who immediately listened to King James' order, however, was the Earl of Bothwell, who ran charging into battle a full hour after King James had. And remember, they're all still stuck in there getting killed with longbows and billhooks. This has been going on for hours at this point. However, the Earl of Bothwell is kind of an idiot. He could have sent his forces in some kind of flanking maneuver, literally any kind of maneuver other than going straight up the hill. So take some pressure off King James and the other troops caught in the Death Marsh, which is, you know, rapidly growing with corpses at this point. Instead, he piled his forces through the same exact goddamn swamp right into the growing mosh pit of death that King James' men were all stuck in. And if that wasn't bad enough, things are about to get way worse for the Scots. Because you see, at the beginning of all this, Surrey had sent one of his commanders, Lord Stanley, and his forces away from his army. And then they got lost. They couldn't find Surrey's army. They were just kind of wandering around. They finally hired a local villager, like, "Hey, there's a battle going on nearby. Where the fuck is it?" And the villager's like, "Oh yeah, there's like 50,000 people murdering one another over there. We'll take you over in that direction." Finally, by 6:30 p.m., hours after the battle had begun, he managed to find the battlefield, and he happened to pop out behind a hill in some trees where the Scots couldn't see them. So then they charged into battle. First, they hit the Scottish reserves, who had been refusing to go in, causing them to break and run from the field before they even, like, start crossing swords. They see them coming, like, "Yo, fuck this, we're gone." Then they closed in on King James's rear, fully encircling the Scottish force, trapping them on the downside of a slope in the swampy ground at the bottom. At some point around 7 p.m., 30 minutes after that, King James was dead, either from an arrow to the face or a billhook in his fleshy nooks and crannies. We're not entirely sure which. It took some time for the rest of the Scottish soldiers to notice that their king was dead, at which point all of the remaining morale and will to fight collapsed entirely. The battle was over. The Scottish army was entirely crushed. 14,000 Scots lay dead in a field. But that isn't even the worst part. I mean, that is bad. But among the dead was virtually the entire Scottish government. The king was dead, as was almost all of the Scottish clergy who went into battle with them.
Warrior priests.
Yeah, they tried to be paladins, and so they just died.
That should have stayed as a cleric.
With them went 21 earls, 14 of the 20 lords of the Scottish Parliament, 300 of the kingdom's landed gentry, and to add to that tally, Lord Home, the man who refused to commit his forces, survived, but then was executed for treason for not going into battle, so tally that in with him. Scotland was annihilated after that. Like, the government, everything, every single institution in the kingdom was in tatters. And King James' 17-month-old son was named king. And the surviving Scottish nobility was so busy screaming at one another they couldn't organize a response to their own crushing defeat. And then to add salt in the wound, the war on the continent eventually made the entire battle completely meaningless, because the next year the Holy League would disband, France and England would make peace, and the English demanded that France stop helping Scotland, and the French were like, yeah, okay.
Yes, kind of a battle for nothing.
A battle for nothing, over nothing, and for no reason. But you did lose an entire government in it, so who's to say it's good or bad?
And would lead to the rise of Grillion Wallace.
That's right. Scotland had found themselves locked into what amounted to be a proxy war and suffered the worst military defeat in their history. And the only thing they had to get, the only thing that they got for this entire thing was a stupid baby king. Though, fun fact, James' son, the new King James V, would also die during a war against the English, though not in the way his dad did. James V's army marched off into battle, and then, you know, he fell sick from ye old wasting disease and died in bed. And then his army was crushed in the field while he was dying. Also like his father, an infant took the throne after he died, his daughter, Mary, when she was 6 days old. Baby king, then baby queen, everything's coming up Scotland, surely nothing bad will come from this. And that is the Battle of Flodden Fields. So, Tom, we do a thing on this show called Question from the Legion. If you'd like to ask us a question from the Legion, you can support the show through Patreon, and then you can go on our Discord channel and you'll see a little thread called Questions from the Legion. You can put them there. You can ask us on Patreon, or you can stuff them into a bottle of Buckfast and invade Northern England. If you drive far enough south and get to London, you can give it to Tom. And today's question from the Legion is, what do you rate your chances in fighting against Steven Seagal?
Ooh. Are we talking about Steven Seagal, like, now?
I'll go either way.
If it's now, 100%.
I don't even like saying now, because he's like an elderly old fat guy.
I'll beat up a fat old guy.
I mean, to be fair, he is accused of some pretty heinous things, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And even Steven Seagal in his prime is, remember, like, his entire backstory is full of shit.
Yeah.
And also, he knows Aikido, which isn't even real.
There's not a single, Steven Seagal, like, the only thing that he contributed to society was that one reggae song that he wrote.
Are you talking about the Steven Seagal song, Me Want the Punani, perhaps?
Yes, I am talking about that. That is the only contribution of cultural significance of his career.
I would say there's two things. There's also the time he tried to get in a fight with Judo Jean LaBelle, and he was choked out and shit himself. That is a cultural touchstone he's given us all.
Like, look, you know, it's bad enough getting, beaten up, but getting the literal shit kicked out of you, like, literally you lose so bad you shit yourself.
Like, Jean LaBelle is an honest guy. I believe he's passed now, but he's never one to, like, really, at least from my understanding, he's not one to, like, lie about things. I have been choked out quite a few times as someone who does Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It comes with the territory. I have never shit myself. Judo Gene LaBelle choked out Steven Seagal so bad he shit his pants in an actual fight. This isn't like he ambushed him and choked him out. It's because Steven Seagal believed his, like, was drinking his own Kool-Aid and got his ass stomped in, and then his pants full with shit.
Like, if you want an assessment of Steven Seagal's character, like,
he's also been accused of some horrific shit, which I don't want to get into, so fuck Steven Seagal.
No, I was going to say, this is a man who has now sought asylum in Russia. Is that him or JCVD?
No, that's definitely Steven Seagal. He has some bullshit government job. He hangs out with, like, Lukashenko and shit.
Steven, do you like potato?
There's a very famous video of Lukashenko giving Steven Seagal a carrot. And then eating it and saying how it makes him feel so much stronger and shit like that.
Steven, this carrot, it is gift from Belarusian people. Do you like tractors?
Yeah, that's pretty much what the video is. It's like, it's absolutely baffling. It's so strange. And Steven Seagal went from being, also, like, I think I've talked about this before in the show. We did an episode about one of Steven Seagal's movies years ago. I believe it was Under Siege, when he was a cook in the Navy, but he was actually a Navy SEAL undercover or some shit. It was terrible. But he once went on Saturday Night Live as a host and was so intensely unfunny that they could not make it work, despite all of... And this is back when Saturday Night Live was at least decent. They still couldn't write jokes that he could deliver. And he kept threatening people backstage. And whenever they had Steven Seagal write a joke, the whole punch on him was like, and then I beat his ass. That was like his whole thing. He's like, I just want to beat people up. It's like, sir, this is a sketch comedy show.
Yeah,
what the fuck are you talking about?
Steven Seagal in Belarus, aka the Scrappy Doo of geopolitics.
No, that's disrespectful to Scrappy Doo. Fuck Belarus.
Minsk gets no respect.
I should say the government of Belarus. I have nothing against any country, only governments. Tom, that is a podcast. You have a different podcast. Plug your show.
Beneath Skin's show about the history of everything told through the history of tattoos, and also Glue Factory, a comedy podcast from some friends of the show from Trash Future.
This is the only podcast that I host, but if you like what we do here and you think it's worth your time and money, you can support us on Patreon, where you have years and years worth of bonus content. You have early episodes, you have Discord access, you have videos of our live show, as well as audio of our live show. You get first dibs on merch and live show tickets when they come up, and you get all that for $5. So do that and leave us a review on wherever it is you listen to podcasts. It helps us immensely. Until next time, drink lean, become a Highland berserker. I'm getting a note from our lawyer. Don't do that.